My name is Goody Howard, and I'm a sexologist, educator, and consultant.
So this is a really good topic because, as we talked before, sex is something that the conversation starts off in the school, and I feel like I don't even remember the conversation, so even if it's only had once, it's not continued or mm-hmm. built out in maturity. Mm-hmm. And so we grow up with immature ideas of, like, sex. And so I want to frame the questions, right, around the context of helping. I'm going to explore some ideas around sex that I feel like we never got to ask an expert.
Okay.
You know, so we all just kind of experimented and figured out along the way.
Yes.
So my first question is, how does engaging in sex contribute to overall relaxation and stress reduction?
Oh, wow. So orgasm, I'm not even gonna say sex, I'm gonna say orgasm, because you can get orgasms with yourself or with a partner. And so that's what contributes, right? The healing benefits of orgasm are amazing. Like, they lower blood pressure, they help with oxytocin release and wellness, and, you know, reduce migraines and improve sleep quality. And it's just so many different health benefits. And all of those kind of trickle into your mental wellness, because when you feel in your body a certain way, it definitely impacts, you know, your mental wellness. I tell people all the time, I heard a doctor say a dehydrated brain functions as a depressed brain. So we don't even realize how something like more water can impact our mental wellness. So the experience of orgasm has a whole, like, oh my gosh, hormonally, emotionally, mentally, your vision improves, like, all kind of stuff happens in the body, but it's mostly that pleasure center, those dopamines, those oxytocins, that helps with the release of joy and relaxation and calm, and it reduces the cortisol levels, which are the stress hormones. So it just sort of creates this euphoria, almost this high, right, of just sort of a healing peace. And so I think it absolutely can contribute to mental wellness.
How did you get into sex education as a professor?
I got into this because I was raised in a sex-positive household, okay? Sex-positive meaning my mother is a nurse, so we were taught about the body and menstruation, and we weren't ashamed of our naked bodies and things like that. It was not a body-positive household. So we was, you know, 3 years old on diets, you know, we doing Mickey Mouse-ercise and things like that. Not body positive, but definitely sex positive. So we could ask questions if we needed to. We weren't really taught about the social implications of sexual activity. Like, oh, they gonna call you a hoe. Or, oh, they gonna, you know, those types of things. But everything else kind of the, you know. But basically I've been a sex educator since I was 10. Because I started my menstrual cycle when I was 10. When I was 8, we had a talk. Right? And my mother prepared me, okay, this is gonna happen, this is why, this is what you do. Like, we did the drills with the panty, you know, all the things. So she bought me pads every time she bought pads after that talk. So I got 2 years worth of pads stocked up. I'm 10, I start my cycle. I do what I was taught to do. Now I'm 11 and a half. I know what I'm supposed to do. I got pads, my friends are starting their periods and stuff, so I'm the one in the bathroom. At 10 years old, okay, this is what's happening. This is what you do. So I've always sort of been a sex educator. My mom, I was 11 and a half. I was like, when you go get to the store, can you bring me some pads? She was like, okay, but you don't need pads yet. You haven't started your period yet. I was like, ma'am, I'm on my period right now. What are you saying to me? I'm running low. And she's like, what? You didn't even tell me. And I was like, I didn't know I was supposed to tell you. You told me this is gonna happen. This is what you do, right? And so that's what I did. You prepared me for success. So I didn't need to have a press conference. And that's how we need to think about how we interact with sex ed with our kids. We always say, oh, you know, let me know when you want to have sex and we'll go get some condoms. And you think you're being this, you know, open door. By the time they come ask you, it's too late. Somebody think they're pregnant. By the time they come ask you for condoms, they've at least experimented, right? And so you kind of have to, what my mom did, she just kind of prepared me for success and let me run free. That's how long I've been a sex educator, because then I always had extra pads and she always made sure I had little pads in my bag and stuff. So I was helping everyone else through it. And it's just sort of, grew. I was always the person that people could ask about their questions, and if I didn't know, I was gonna go find out. You know, I'm microfiche and card catalog years old, way before Google. You know, I've been doing this almost 20 years. Google is not 20. But I mean, so it's just, it's always been this way. It's always been a part of my life. And people that have known me for a long time see me now and go, yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. We're a very sexualized culture, but we're not a sexually educated culture. And so the idea that the vagina is receptive and the penis is, you know, disruptive, and so you're the receiving partner, so you receive all the feelings, and the puritanical ambient Christianity of the globe, right? That says that, you know, the purity concept and all of these things, it's like boy math, right? Boy math is thinking that one girl that sleeps with 10 dudes is loose, but one girl that sleeps with one dude 10 times, that like their vaginal integrity is the same. You know what I'm saying? Boy math is thinking that it's different. And so, or they, you know, so just not understanding how your partner's bodies work is a huge part of sex ed that I feel like is missing. You know, for everyone, we learn about the bodies that we have. We don't learn about the bodies of the that we don't have, or that of our potential partners, unless, you know, you're same sex or whatever. But like, not understanding that is a detriment to society. I saw this lady on the street asking dudes, where do women pee when they have a tampon? Like, what happens when a woman pees with a tampon on? And they're like, oh, she gotta take it out because she can't pee with it in, right? Because what? Right? They don't even know the anatomy of the people that they're sleeping with. And then it's just like, how do you, as with sex being something that is relaxing and contributing to mental wellness, right? If you automatically think you're good at it by virtue of your penis, because no one ever told you anything different. Men are not taught to how to interact with people they're not attracted to or socially responsible for. Whereas women are socialized to have to interact with every kind of man on the planet, right? And so you don't even understand the body that you're trying to please that make you such a big man. Like, and no one's ever told you you're bad at sex or that you could do something differently. So there's just like this gap in understanding pleasure. Like, yeah, y'all have the physical response to the stimulus, but did you enjoy it? Were you concerned and centered on your partner's pleasure too? Like, what kind of, you know what I'm saying? It's just some holes. But when you go in sexually confident, like we said earlier, that can add to your relaxation and your sense of accomplishment and therefore feed into your confidence because you're certain about what you know about your pleasure and possibly your partner's pleasure. Whereas if you just out here slanging, you ain't got no education, you ain't thought about it, you ain't asked no questions, and you think you're handling business, but you're not, maybe you're not sure, or you have a whole lot of one hit of quitters, right? No one ever comes back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So now you kind of, there's some holes in that confidence. Then sex is stressful as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Can I cuss? Is that a thing?
I'm fine with it.
I would say you get these master's degrees and profanities on me.
Give me a moment to be sincere. Feeling this way since top of the year. Lately we've been real unsure, unclear. Is it just me?
Because of ownership, men think that, like, Mr. and Mrs. Mrs. is the possessive of Mr. It's not a plural. It's the possessive. Mrs. His. Right? There's an ownership that just comes with the patriarchy, baby. Y'all think y'all own everything. Whether you outwardly do or not, your species, I'm saying. Like, men typically tend to stand in ownership. And so you want the, you know, the patriarchal system and you know, like I said, ambient Christianity sort of places value on purity or the perception of purity. And men know that they're savages. So now you've ravaged this woman. She's no longer pure. Right? And so because, again, women as the receiving partners and all these other things, they're conceptualizing the value placed on the concept of virginity, because virginity is a construct, it's not a thing. Like, you can't check somebody to tell if they're a virgin or not. And so understanding that, and then how many people, like, you want a sexually confident partner, but then you, some people are so insecure in the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, where'd she learn this? I ain't teach her this. What, this was, you know what I'm saying? And they feel away. Or you don't, you want a virgin because of you know she's never been anywhere and you don't have anybody else to measure up to. And it's just you. You at the top of the pile automatic because there's no pile. Whereas if she has any kind of experience, you don't know how you measure up. into whoever she's been with before. But that's the same kind of performance anxiety that women have, but I think it's more for men. And so that's why I'm saying sometimes sex, you know, in those conditions, sex ain't the most wellness, maybe just the orgasm part.
I learned, I was like, oh, as men, we put a lot of, I believe in not just blaming men, whatever, but the inability to understand the bigger picture, we would put unnecessary stress on women about sex. Mm-hmm. And then that lack of harmony around or maturity around sex would like create problems, right? Like, mm-hmm. like I'm in the money business. Two reasons people get divorced, money and sex, mm-hmm. and both of them are lack of it, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and so that was the big thing, but the cycle of lack of sex was because of the stress around the topic from misunderstood perspectives. Mm-hmm.
And then the tables turn. That's the irony. You pressured me for sex this whole marriage. And now we can't even have it for real. And now I'm pressuring you. You know what I'm saying? Because what's up? You know what I'm saying? And there are like 18 different erectile dysfunction disappointment drugs for penises. There's only one for clits. Like, we just accept it as a part of life and move on. Men are not having it. Y'all are like, no, this is not a part of getting older. Give me some medicine.
How do you help couples that have, right, they're at a point where they're like, all right, sex is important to both of us. Mm-hmm. We know that, like, we know the act is obviously relaxing when done properly, but, like, how do you get them to wrap their minds back around making it a pleasurable, relaxing experience, which will allow
it. It's a group effort. Flipping the switch to make pleasure something you enjoy is a lot, especially in a long-term marriage. So sometimes it's because the receiving partner, that's the only area they perceive they have power. And so I'm a hold the thing that I have that's powerful that you want, I'm gonna withhold that from you because you're not doing what I need you to do. And so that's when they show up with, oh, I'm not doing that, with sex as a weapon, which I don't agree with, but I'm just, that's what you asked me. And so it becomes, this is the only thing I have of value from you. So I'm gonna hold it until we have a conversation about what's going on with me, or I'm just not gonna say nothing. You're just gonna figure it out. You know what I'm saying? And so in that context, I think that it's important for the men to understand that there's a balance of labor. And if the woman is doing everything in the house and the child rearing and the cooking, the cleaning and working outside the home, there needs to be an equitable division of labor. Y'all need to figure out what works for you. Every marriage is different. You know, some people do things that you may not do in your house, but it works in their house kind of thing. So she may be just tired. There are seven different kinds of rest, so that she might just be tired in all seven of those ways, right? Helping with the division of labor, thinking about prioritizing, like date night, people say. And, you know, sometimes you know date night, okay, that's the night we're gonna try to have sex or whatever. Have sex before you go out. Because by the end of the day, you done ate, you tired, you draw, you know what I'm saying? Just have sex before you go out. And do like a month where you have sex every 72 hours, like at least once every 3 days. Now, your partner doesn't need to know it. It's where you initiate it. So no, any partner that's hearing this message, I'm talking to you, okay? Whether it's any of the partners. Put a calendar alert for every 72 hours so that you know that you need to initiate sex. Because it's been 3 days. And just do it for a month and see how the chemistry of your relationship changes. Because also, men have to bear the burden of initiation. And they're like, oh, he don't. If a woman was in a relationship where she didn't feel physically valued, it would be a problem. Men want to feel physically valued as well, desired, you know? And so he can't be the only one.
Mm.
You know, and so it's like, but I gotta cook, I gotta clean, I gotta get the groceries, buy the groceries, pick them up, prepare them, comb hair, clean kids, do laundry, all these things, and I got an outside job, and you want sex too? Pick a struggle, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, and so it kind of gets to being a partner versus being a spouse, I think would improve the bedroom. A lot of stuff, a lot of the couples that I deal with, the sexual problems are the symptoms of non-sexual problems. They're problems that they got upright with their clothes on. They just kind of manifest in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just don't think about, oh, we need to bring some sex toys. Although sex toys are your friend. Don't think about fixing a sexual problem with a sexual solution. Think about non-sexual ways that you can support the sexual culture of your relationship.
What are some of the common misconceptions about sex and relaxation that we haven't talked about that comes up with you know, conversations you have with people about sex?
I know a lot of people kind of participate in self-pleasure to sleep better and things like that. And maybe they have just one way they do it all the time. I think a common misconception is that you don't need lubricant, you know, for self-pleasure. And that lotion is not lubricant. Because lotion will like absorb into the skin. That's what it's designed to do. You need something that's gonna stay on the outside of the skin to maintain the slips, because friction, if you have self-pleasure in a high friction way, you can damage the blood vessels in the penis, which will mess with your erection quality. And as y'all know, sometimes it's a pickle, sometimes it's a pipe. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna be a pickle day all day if you don't use lubricant. But that's a misconception. Or I don't even need to do that because I got a girl at home, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's for people that, you know, masturbation or self-pleasure is for people that don't have nobody, that can't pull no, right? That's who that's for. Absolutely not. Not only does it help reduce your instance of prostate cancer, it improves your erection quality. It improves your refractory period, which is the space between round one and round two. Okay, it helps with your ejaculation quality and texture and frequency, sperm health, right? It helps with all these different things. And we talked about the mental wellness and physical health benefits, right? It makes you just mellow out. It reduces cortisol, improves oxytocin, and it's all these other soft benefits. And a lot of times that can make you a better partner because like you're real stressed out. What I tell a lot of times when I meet couples and they're like, oh, he wants it all the time and she doesn't want it half the time. My usual suggestion is masturbation for both of them. Because if you're at an 8 and she's at a 4 and you masturbate, that's gonna fill the gap and bring you down to a 6. And she's a 4 and she masturbates, that's gonna increase her arousal to bring her up to a 6. And now y'all are both a 6, right? But I also make sure that people understand that just because you want more doesn't mean you're gonna get more. And low desire doesn't necessarily mean a problem. Some people are just lower desire. And I think men specifically don't know that they may be low desire. And they, you know, people think, oh, what's wrong with you? I just don't want it all the time because maybe I'm fulfilled so much in my life and I'm such a boss that sex is when I want it and I don't feel like I need it, so I'm good. You know what I'm saying? There's just certain things about that. So I think there are lots of misconceptions that I see, but like the biggest one to me is that, you know, self-pleasure doesn't exist in a relationship or a healthy relationship. I think that's false. And I also think that when we talk about how physical connection and sexual connection in a relationship is not just about reaching orgasm. I think a lot of people think it's just about the orgasm. It's about the pleasure along the way, right? Like think about like a road trip. You on a road trip, you're going to orgasm town. You get in the car, ain't no snacks, ain't no games, the radio don't work. You're like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And that ride takes forever, right? But if you get to the car, y'all going to orgasm town and you get in the car and they got snacks and music and you got games and all that, and you have a good time, you're like, damn, we here already? Right? Because you were entertained. You enjoyed the ride to Orgasm Town.
Mm-hmm.
So the games and the snacks and all of that is the pleasure, the exploration, the connection, in addition to the physical part of it. Right? And so I think that's another big piece is that people just focus on orgasm. And just because you came don't mean she did. You know what though? Some people are asexual and feel a lot of stress around sex. But like the percentage of people in the world that know they're asexual is very small.
Mm.
But I think a man that was asexual would have a whole nother way of processing that because men's masculinity is so rooted in the penis and the activity of such that I think an asexual man would have a lot of anxiety around the expectation to be a sexual being.
I can see that.
Because a lot of this is, we're talking about, you know, sex and mental health. Asexual people experience sex very differently and it does impact them, their mental health in negative ways. People that are over-sexed or that have had abuse or violation in their past, there's a lot of anxiety around sexual performance for them too. So it really depends on the lived experience of the person, if it's gonna be a positive or a negative impact on their mental wellness. But the actual physical benefits of orgasm on mental wellness are very well scientifically documented.
Yeah, and I like the way you put it about, because it's like money. you know, a lot of people will go chase the money. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you don't gotta chase the money if you feel like money. Meaning like if you have a proper mindset around money, mm-hmm. the money will follow you.
Challenge you to cut and paste proper for healthy.
Yeah,
health. I know that's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And you said you struggled with saying proper in a couple of other ones. Because you stop. I hear you say it like, oh, I don't want to say proper. Just cut and paste healthy.
Healthy, yeah. A healthy relationship with money. So I feel the same way with sex. I feel like if I understand what you're saying if you mentally have a healthy relationship with sex, whatever mm-hmm. that means to you, mm-hmm. right? You feel good about sex, mm-hmm. your sexuality. Then it'll kind of just naturally flow.
Yeah, it'll be a benefit to your mental wellness. Whereas you have some violation or some trauma, or maybe your sexual orientation and the way you're attracted to people doesn't line up with what society expects it to, it's definitely gonna add to your anxiety, to your depression, to the spiraling, to the feelings of failure. It's gonna be a challenge. But just know that, I think people need to know that they're not damaged, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just different and they need a different kind of support. You know, and I think people just decide that they're broken or something is wrong with them and give up. And I would hate for that to happen for folks, especially Black men. Like, y'all got enough going on,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
Nate Cotman. Some people consider me to be an influencer, social media influencer. But all around, just a guy with a large heart that wants to make an impact on the lives of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for being a part of it. I really wanted to have you in here because you have a unique story about that really kind of helped expose your messaging, your story to the world. And it started with vulnerability, right? Which that's where the influence started to the people, but like that's not where the story started. So let's talk about a little bit about vulnerability and how that helped you heal through some areas of your life that you really wanted to heal through.
Yeah. So I personally believe that vulnerability is a superpower, right? But it's a superpower that a lot of people don't tap into, especially men, because it's looked at as a sign of weakness. So I know for me, you know, I was married for 5 years, not proud of the man I was in that marriage. And I remember exiting that marriage just hiding from myself, a lot of dishonesty, a lot of avoidance, right? So we divorced. After having been divorced for about a year and a half, I had this compelling feeling to reach out to her and just share everything, share what I was going through at the time that caused us to walk through our demise, share the places in my life where I fell short and I compromised our marriage. And that moment of vulnerability was really, excuse me, that moment of vulnerability for me was really a life-changing experience. Now, prior to that, I remember on social media just talking to the world about my journey to the place that I was in. I remember prior to that, my father had passed maybe a couple months before I began to really open up to the world. So it was a divorce and then my father's passing that really caused me to recognize the importance of vulnerability. And so for me, I told myself that I'm going to dare to be vulnerable, even if that means being judged, ostracized, criticized, that vulnerability is healthy for me. And so me sharing with the world, you know, my failures, what I learned from those failures actually ended up being therapeutic for me. Just so happened that people began to gravitate to it and it became something that other people needed.
What do you think really resonated with the people when it comes to like your message and why was vulnerability so powerful?
Yeah, I think I think that it was just the fact that somebody dared to be vulnerable about something that was so private, something that was so embarrassing, right? But that a man dared to be vulnerable. I think that that was more so the premise and what caused people to really gravitate to it, because typically on social media, you see people sharing their successes. They talk about their highlight reels. They talk about the things that they've done well. But very rarely do you see people on social media talking about the areas where they fell short and the lessons that were learned. So I think that it was the fact that I was willing to be vulnerable. I think that's the part that resonated with people, because here's the deal, right? Your failure may not be my failure, but we've all experienced failure, right? And so just the act of opening up and saying, listen, this is the area of my life that I failed in, that became transformative for people.
Influence, right? So influence is something that I know you don't take lightly, and you have quite a bit of followers and people that actually engage with your page.
Just a few.
And you can tell that, you can tell a lot through engagement that you really are connecting to people's hearts. And so do you at all think about the influence that your message has, and how do you carry that?
Yeah, for sure. I do think about it, and I'm always reminded to be responsible with it. There are a bunch of different things that we can do with influence. We can use it to draw attention to ourselves. We can use it to steer people in the wrong direction. We can use it to influence people in a way that is counterproductive to their mental health and their well-being. Or we can use it as a way to build a community of people who see an example of something they want to emulate and really begin to do just that. So for me, for instance, when I talk about relationships, right, we know in the day and age that we live in and on social media, there are a lot of divisive conversations around relationships. And so there's so much of that that's pervasive. For me, I'm responsible with my brand to talk about relationships from a perspective that's healthy. You know, so often we talk about what we don't want. We don't really focus on what we do want. And so that's one of the ways that that I use my platform for good. Another way is to really model what it means to be a vulnerable man. Right? In a day and age that really promotes toxic masculinity, you know, I promote masculine vulnerability. And so I'm intentional about using that platform and my influence for what I believe is good. Prior to being vulnerable or exercising vulnerability or modeling vulnerability, I felt like an imposter. Yeah, I felt like an imposter. There was so much that I was holding inside. You know, I have a mentor that always says, what doesn't come up and out of your mouth in words will come up and out of your body in actions.
Mm.
So what we don't clearly communicate or openly express, we act out. So prior to living a life of vulnerability, instead of talking about the things that were going on, I looked for outlets that weren't healthy for me, which affected my mental health in a negative way. Becoming more vulnerable put me in a position to be able to really express myself. And so I looked for less of those outlets outside of that, which was a benefit to my mental health.
Last question, and this is a leading question, so you can take it where you want to go. But I feel like, and you hit it on the nail. I feel like there's a happiness portal, right, that we all have to go through in order to get to the next level of happiness. And that happiness portal involves, like, first not judging yourself, and then not giving a shit about people judging you. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you feel about that? Is that something that you've thought about, that you've experienced, that's been part of your journey?
You know, for me, when I went through my divorce, I had a lot of people that I was close to for many, many years walk away. You know, didn't agree with how I moved in that season of my life, disappointment, different things like that. And so because of that, I developed a shell, right? And this mentality that I can't be so tethered to the perspectives, emotions, approval of other people that I allow it to affect my mental health. So there is a point that you get to where you say, listen, how people feel, they have the right to feel however they want to feel, but I can't allow that to dictate my next move, how I show up in the world, right? I got to continue to show up as my best self, you know what I'm saying? Or grow to the point, evolve to the point where I'm showing up as my best self regardless of what people think. And that translated over to social media. When I began to talk about my failed marriage, I didn't know how people would respond. I didn't know if people would judge me. I didn't know if people would criticize me. But I had to do what was best for me. And so sometimes you get to a place where you say, listen, regardless of what people think, I got to do what's best for me.
Cool, man. Appreciate you. Thanks for sharing for this, because this is important to me. You sharing some things that I feel like men and women can appreciate. I definitely appreciate it, and you definitely model, vulnerability well. So appreciate you.
Man, I appreciate the invite. Thank you.